Welcome to the deep dive. Ever look at a cracked bit of concrete and wonder what actually went wrong inside? Today, we're heading beneath the surface, into the world of reinforced concrete.
Right.
We've got a fascinating piece of research that really digs into how rust on the steel bars inside, the rebar, can cause those cracks.
Yeah, it's quite complex. And it turns out whether that rust is spread evenly or like pops up in spots.
Unevenly.
Exactly. And how those steel bars are arranged, well, it makes a huge difference.
So we're looking at the paper Phase Field Modeling for Investigating the Effect of Rebar Positioning in Uniform versus Non-Uniform Corrosion on Concrete Fracture by Vu and others from 2025.
That's the one. Think of this as trying to understand the secret life of our concrete structures, what makes them tick or, well, crack.
And for you, the listener, this isn't just, academic stuff. It's about gaining a real understanding of why some concrete bridges or buildings seem to last forever.
While others don't.
Right. While others show their age much faster, especially in, say, harsh environments, this research gives us some really valuable clues.
Definitely.
Okay, so reinforced concrete. It's pretty much everywhere. Why is it the go-to for so much construction?
Well, it's all about teamwork, really. Concrete is incredibly strong when you're squeezing it. That's compression.
Right.
But it's relatively weak when you're trying to pull it apart. Tension.
Ah, okay.
Steel rebar is kind of the opposite. It's fantastic at resisting that pulling force.
So you put them together.
Exactly. You get a super strong, durable material that can handle all sorts of loads. It's pretty ingenious.
But that durability, it has its limits, doesn't it? What are the common things that cause this steel inside to actually corrode, to rust?
The main culprits are things like chlorides, so salt, whether it's from sea air or, the stuff we put on roads in winter.
De-icing salts.
Yep. And carbon dioxide in the air. These can sort of seep into the concrete over time.
And then what happens?
They kick off a chemical reaction with the steel, basically causing it to rust.
And when steel rusts, it's not just a surface thing, is it? It actually, bulks up.
Oh, significantly, yeah.
That must put a lot of pressure on the surrounding concrete.
Exactly right. Rust takes up a much larger volume than the original steel. Imagine something inside just expanding.
Okay.
That expansion creates tremendous internal pressure within the concrete. It can break the bond, the grip, between the steel and the concrete, which weakens the whole structure.
And visibly.
Visibly. Mm-hmm. That pressure leads to cracking and sometimes even delamination, where layers of the concrete start to peel away.
Wow.
And that reaction with carbon dioxide, carbonation, that also contributes, making the concrete itself more brittle and more likely to crack.
So how have engineers traditionally tried to figure this out? Did they just wait for cracks to appear?
Oh, no, not at all. Experimental studies have been really important. A common method is accelerated corrosion testing.
Speeding it up.
Yeah, essentially they put concrete samples with rebar in, say, a super salty environment. Or sometimes they even use a small electric current to make the rusting happen much faster.
Okay, so they get to see the effects quicker.
Right, in a much shorter time frame than waiting, decades for natural corrosion.
So that gives you the physical evidence, the what happens. But this paper uses computer modeling, right, to look more at the how and why.
That's right.
Tell us about this phase field modeling. What's that about?
Okay, so think of phase field modeling like maybe a sophisticated video game for cracks.
Ah, okay.
It's a computational way to simulate how cracks appear and grow within materials like concrete. It's particularly good for materials that are sort of brittle or quasi-brittle.
Like concrete.
Precisely. Because it can show the whole process continuously without needing to pre-guess where a crack might start. It just sort of emerges from the simulation.
A virtual crack growing machine. I like it. What makes the way they used it in the study special? Was there an advancement?
Yeah. What's really clever here is that they incorporated something called strain orthogonal conditions.
Strain orthogonal conditions. Sounds technical.
It is a bit, but basically it's a way for the computer model to be much more accurate about how the concrete behaves after it starts getting damaged. It makes the simulation closer to reality.
Okay, so more realism once cracking starts.
Exactly. You see, previous computer studies on this often looked at either, even rusting or uneven rusting, but they didn't always include this extra layer of accuracy for the post-damage behavior.
So this paper is aiming for a more realistic picture of what's actually happening inside the concrete as it corrodes.
That's the goal. The researchers wanted to use this more advanced modeling technique to really investigate how both the positioning of the rebar inside a typical concrete section,
where it sits,
right, and whether the rusting happens uniformly all around the bar or non-uniformly in patches,
right,
how those factors affect the way the concrete actually fractures.
Okay, that brings us to a really key idea in the paper: uniform versus non-uniform corrosion. How did they simulate these two different types? Let's start with uniform.
Okay. Uniform corrosion in their model is kind of like the rebar swelling evenly all around.
Like inflating a tiny balloon inside.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The rust products cause an equal displacement and equal pushing outwards around the entire rebar surface.
And that leads to?
It leads to radial pressure pushing out in all directions, which eventually causes the concrete to crack, usually with a crack spreading straight outwards.
Makes sense. Even pressure, fairly predictable crack. Now, non-uniform corrosion. That sounds like it could be trickier. How'd they model that?
They used a kind of lopsided model, specifically a semi-elliptical shape, to represent it. Imagine the rust expansion being much greater at one point around the rebar.
Okay.
And much, much smaller at another point. In their simulations, the minimum displacement was only about 1/30th of the maximum.
Whoa, so it's really bulging out in one spot, but hardly changing elsewhere.
Pretty much. And they also considered how the position within the concrete cross-section mattered for this. So whether the maximum bulge was pointing towards the surface or sideways or inwards.
Right, because that uneven pressure would interact differently with the surrounding concrete depending on which way it's pushing hardest.
Exactly. Position P1 versus P2 in their diagrams showed this difference clearly.
Okay, so we've got the simulation tool, phase field modeling with that extra accuracy, and we've got these two ways rust can form, uniform and non-uniform. Now, what did they actually find when they ran these virtual experiments? Did they use standard concrete properties?
Yeah, they used typical values for concrete you'd expect in real structures. Things like its stiffness, the elastic modulus, how easily it fractures, fracture toughness, Poisson's ratio.
How it deforms sideways when squeezed.
Right. And a technical thing called a length parameter, which helps the model capture the crack formation zone accurately.
And the basic setup for their virtual tests, the boundary conditions, how they held the sample, that was consistent?
Yes. They kept the boundary and loading conditions the same across the examples. Essentially, they fixed one point completely and allowed another point to move horizontally but not vertically, simulating typical constraints. Then they applied the rust expansion as the load.
Got it. So let's start with how just the arrangement of the rebar mattered. They kept the total steel area roughly the same, right? And used a standard 15-millimeter concrete cover.
Correct. They compared one big D20 rebar with configurations like 2D14s, 3D12s, and even 4D10s arranged asymmetrically.
Okay, so same amount of steel, just distributed differently. What happened under uniform corrosion?
With uniform corrosion, the interesting thing was generally they saw a single, fairly straight crack propagating out towards the surface. Didn't matter too much if it was one big bar or several smaller ones in these asymmetric layouts.
Huh.
And the amount of rust expansion needed to start that crack, they called it T1, and for it to reach the edge, T2, was relatively small.
Okay, relatively straightforward. What about when they simulated that uneven, non-uniform corrosion with those same rebar arrangements?
Ah, here's where things got really different. With non-uniform corrosion, yes, they still saw main cracks going out to the surface.
Yeah.
But they also started seeing additional cracks, sort of branching off along the edges of the concrete section. More complex patterns.
Okay, so potentially more widespread damage.
Potentially, yes. And importantly, the amount of rust expansion needed at T1 to start the cracks and T2 to get them to the surface was actually larger than in the uniform case for these arrangements.
That seems a bit counterintuitive. More complex cracking, but needs more rust?
Well, think about it. The pressure is concentrated. It might take more localized expansion to initiate that first break against the bulk concrete. And maybe the complex pattern takes more effort to fully develop.
Okay. Any other differences in how the cracks grew?
Yeah, for the setups with multiple smaller rebars, like the 2D14s or 3D12s, the amount of extra rust needed between T1 and T2 between initiation and propagation to the edge.
Is a growth phase.
Right. That growth phase required less additional rust expansion for uniform corrosion. But for non-uniform, while it might have needed less rust right at T1, it needed a larger amount of additional rust to get to T2.
So maybe slower to start, but then needs more push to fully break through.
Something like that seems to be implied, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a hint that the single larger D20 rebar
seemed
to lead to faster crack propagation after it initiated, compared to the multiple smaller bars.
Yeah.
Once it went quicker.
Interesting. Size matters there.
Oh.
Okay, let's switch gears. They also looked at symmetrical arrangements, right? 4D10 rebars.
Yes, 4D10s, but placed differently, either at the corners of the square concrete section or along the middle of the edges.
And they varied the concrete cover thickness too, 10, 15, 20 millimeters.
Correct.
Let's start with the 4 rebars tucked in the corners. How did uniform versus non-uniform corrosion affect cracking there?
Interestingly, for the corner rebars, they called this 4D10T2, the crack development was quite similar under both uniform and non-uniform corrosion.
Really? After seeing the differences before?
Yeah. In both cases, they saw cracks heading out towards the corners, as you might expect, but also cracks running parallel to the edges between the rebars.
Which sounds like it would lead to the whole cover layer potentially detaching.
Exactly. Cover detachment. And the amount of rust expansion needed at T1 and T2 was also pretty similar between the uniform and non-uniform cases for any given cover thickness.
So putting them in the corners seems to maybe make the type of corrosion less critical for the overall pattern.
It seems that way for the specific corner arrangement, yes. The geometry dominates, perhaps.
Okay. But what happened when they moved those same 4 rebars to the middle of the edges? Configuration 4D10T3.
Oh, now this is where the difference between uniform and non-uniform corrosion really stood out again. Big differences.
Okay, tell me. Uniform first.
With uniform corrosion and these edge-placed rebars, they saw cracks going out to the nearest edges, but also this distinct sort of diamond-shaped crack pattern forming between the rebars in the center of the section.
A diamond shape? Huh. Okay, and non-uniform.
With non-uniform corrosion in that same edge setup, the main cracks just ran parallel to the edges, connecting the rebars along the perimeter. Again, really setting up that cover delamination. No diamond.
So completely different internal cracking depending on whether the rust is even or patchy.
Very different.
Yeah.
And how did the cover thickness play in here?
For both corner and edge arrangements and for both corrosion types, generally thicker cover was better, meaning it took significantly more rust expansion, higher values at both T1 and T2 before the cracks initiated and reached the surface. So more cover gives more protection, delays the damage. That makes intuitive sense. More concrete to push through.
Definitely. But specifically for the edge-placed rebars, there was that interesting trend with non-uniform needing less rust at T1 initiation, but significantly more rust to get to T2 propagation compared to uniform corrosion.
Especially with thinner covers, you said.
Yes, particularly at 10 millimeter and 15 millimeter cover. Then, with the thickest cover, 20 millimeter, that non-uniform case got even more complex because the edge parallel cracks started interacting with hints of that diamond pattern.
Wow. So cover thickness doesn't just delay things. It can interact with the corrosion type to change the failure mode.
It seems so. It influences the stress distribution significantly.
Okay, one last variation they looked at. Pores. Tiny air pockets in the concrete.
Right. They took the 4D10 corner case, T2, with the thick 20 millimeter cover, and added some small, uniformly distributed pores, about 8 millimeters in diameter.
Did that change the crack patterns much?
Interestingly, no. The overall pattern of cracks, those corner-directed and edge-parallel ones, didn't change drastically compared to the non-porous case for either uniform or non-uniform corrosion.
But did it affect the rust levels?
Yes. The structure with the pores consistently showed larger rust expansion displacements needed at both T1 and T2.
So it took more rust to cause the same kind of cracking if pores were present? Why would that be?
The paper suggests it might be because the pores reduce the overall stiffness of the concrete. So it can deform a bit more locally around the expanding rust before it reaches the critical stress needed for fracture to propagate.
Ah, okay. It's slightly squishier locally, so it takes more overall expansion to hit the breaking point?
That seems to be the reasoning, yeah.
So looking at all these simulations, these virtual experiments, what are the main takeaways? What should we remember from this?
Okay, I think there are several really important insights here. First, just having the same amount of steel isn't enough. How you arrange it matters.
Especially asymmetrically.
Right. Asymmetrically placed rebars show quite different damage patterns and require different amounts of rust, depending on whether that corrosion is uniform or non-uniform.
Okay, point one. Arrangement matters, interacts with corrosion type. What else?
Second, even with symmetrical layouts, where that symmetry is corners versus edges, leads to distinct cracking behaviors. And again, non-uniform corrosion often makes those differences clearer.
Point two, symmetry type matters too. And three.
Third, concrete cover thickness is absolutely crucial. No surprise there, but this reinforces it. Thicker cover consistently requires more rust accumulation to cause cracking. It buys you time, increases resilience.
More cover is good. Got it. Anything else?
And finally, even things like the internal structure of the concrete, like the presence of pores, can influence the process, potentially increasing the amount of rust needed for cracking, even if the pattern looks similar.
So it's a combination of factors: rebar layout, corrosion type, cover thickness, and even concrete microstructure.
Exactly. They all interact.
And what does this all mean for, you know, the real world, for engineers designing bridges, buildings, tunnels?
Well, this research offers really valuable insights for designing more durable concrete structures, especially in those aggressive environments where corrosion is a major threat.
How so?
By understanding how these different rebar arrangements respond to uniform versus non-uniform corrosion and the critical role of cover, engineers can potentially make smarter choices, maybe optimize rebar placement.
Not just putting it anywhere.
Right. Optimize placement and ensure adequate, consistent cover thickness to try and minimize weak points where corrosion could initiate damaging cracks. It helps refine design guidelines.
So it's not just about the quantity of steel, but really the quality of its placement and protection, and thinking about the way corrosion might attack it.
Precisely. Is it likely to be uniform, perhaps from carbonation, or highly localized and non-uniform, maybe from a specific chloride source? That could influence the optimal design.
And making sure you have enough concrete protecting that steel, that's still fundamental.
Absolutely fundamental. This study really reinforces just how important adequate concrete cover is as that primary line of defense against the ingress of harmful substances and the resulting expansion pressures.
This is really fascinating stuff. It definitely makes you look at, you know, every crack in a sidewalk or a bridge support a bit differently.
It gives you an appreciation for the hidden forces at work.
Definitely. So here's a thought to leave you with. How could these findings influence not just how we design new infrastructure in corrosive areas, but also how we inspect and maintain existing structures?
Good question.
Could knowing these patterns help us predict where damage is most likely to occur? And thinking beyond the paper, what other hidden factors, things we haven't touched on today, maybe concrete quality variability or different types of steel, might also play a really significant role in the long-term life of our reinforced concrete?
Lots to consider there.
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.